What up, what up, good people? This is Geek Nerd Tech. Today we have cryptocurrency mining. Elon Musk is making news and Black Panther is breaking records. Let's dig in.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Lives, Geek Nerd Tech.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
Welcome
boy.
To Black Hollywood Live. This is Geek Nerd Tech, the show where we break down technology and geek and nerd culture from a black and brown perspective. I'm Akili Shine, and I welcome you all to the show. Man, and that is such a groove, man. Common, Nag Champ, on one of my favorite songs, off one of my favorite albums, like Water for Chocolate. Yeah, feel that. Woo! So we got a lot to cover today. I'm riding solo. My main man, Joe, is out. But we have a lot of great things to cover today, and we're going to just get right into it. So I know there's been a whole lot of conversation and a lot of traction with cryptocurrency. It seems like that is the buzzword of 2018. But hey, I got to tell you, there's a lot of stuff that a lot of people don't know. And one of the things is that one of the big cryptocurrency companies called Bifinex and their company Tether is actually being investigated, subpoenaed for fraud. And so this company claims that Tether the company, it claims that all of its coins are backed by the U.S. dollar and held in reserve based on the currency. And there's been no evidence to, you know, confirm that this is true. And this is how they're marketing, you know, the platform for people to buy these Bitcoins. And so it's a little misleading because, hey, there's no proof that it's actually backed by the dollar. So the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC, has subpoenaed this company and is saying that, you can't be telling people this type of stuff if it's not true. And so their current market capitalization is $2.2 billion. So they have a lot of people investing into this cryptocurrency, but it's based on maybe something that is not factual. And so it's interesting because a lot of people who are trying to get into cryptocurrency, you know, want to invest their money, but may not have all the correct information. And so you invest your money in the wrong company, and hey, your money gets, you know, essentially stolen, or it could go anywhere. And so what they want to do is be able to regulate this type of stuff so that you at least have some type of protections so that your money isn't just easily, you know, it doesn't easily disappear. And so false advertising is not a good thing. But yeah, the whole cryptocurrency topic is just really amazing. Like, I'm starting to actually dip in it to myself. And one of the things that I'm actually been studying is the whole cryptocurrency mining. And that actually speaks to our next topic, where Samsung is actually doing some crazy stuff. So I don't know if you guys know out there, but Samsung is known for making, you know, chips. They're most known for the semiconductor business, right? So they've essentially passed Intel as the world's biggest chip maker. So they make all the processors that we have in our phones and we have in our computers. And so what they're doing now, which is, I think, is extremely interesting, is they're starting to get into cryptocurrency mining. And so it's pretty technical. But these processors that we use in our phones and our computers are actually multi-purpose processors, meaning that you're able to do multiple things on your device. Like, if you wanted to listen to music, you want to, you know, browse the internet, you wanted to, you know, type up a document, you could do that all at the same time, theoretically. So, but with cryptocurrency mining, you want to put all that computational power that your computer has into doing one singular task. And so what Samsung is developing is what is called the ASIC. It's the application specific integrated circuit, where the processor actually is designed to only do one single computational task. So like I said, all that processing power, instead of it being dispersed in multiple directions so that you could do multiple things, now it's streamlining all that processing power to do one thing. And as you know, with cryptocurrency and mining, that you it requires a lot of computational power to be able to solve the problems that are inherent into the Bitcoin transactions. And so what these chips do help you with your computation to be able to do it more seamlessly and to do it more safely, because computers can die and all that information can go with it. So you want to be able to have a computer that has enough power, processing power, to be able to handle such mathematical computations that are required for Bitcoin transactions. So Samsung is that company that is like, hey, we are going to lead this. We are already the number one in processors and semiconductors. We're going to be the number one as it relates to this singular processor. So I think this is pretty interesting because, I mean, I believe cryptocurrency is the future. I believe that, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, like, the world currencies are going to shrink, and there's going to be, you know, probably like 4 to 5 currencies. And so the cryptocurrency, I think, is going to overtake a lot of the nation's currencies that have really no value. And so it's interesting to see, like, these big companies like Samsung kind of digging in right now and early to provide that technological support and foundation for what, you know, the world is slowly adopting. So I think that is super, super fresh. But enough about cryptocurrency. Let's get into one last story. Facebook is actually saying that they're going to ban all ads that are for cryptocurrency. And the reason why they're doing this is because they are classified as deceptive marketeers. And it kind of speaks to the first story that we covered. Like, hey, you're promoting, you know, these stabilized currencies that really aren't stable. And so if this is what's being advertised in front of the Facebook audience, and it's misleading or it's inaccurate or it could cause problems, Facebook doesn't want to be aligned with that. So yes, Facebook wants people to learn about new products and services, but they don't want them to be fearful of being scammed or being deceived. And so what they're saying, just until they understand the whole cryptocurrency world, they're not going to allow any of these companies to essentially promote themselves on the platform. And so they have said that they'll revisit the policy, but right now, like, it's closed door. Like, they're not allowing any of these companies to do any type of promotion or anything. So I think that's pretty interesting. And I think Facebook has done that because they've learned, obviously, from this last election, that they have to be very careful with the advertisement game, because there's so many fake news stories, and there's so many companies that are, like, literally, you know, creating mythologies around their product that, you know, is not accurate, not truthful. And so I kind of applaud that, but I wonder if that rule or that law is going to change anytime soon. But hey, switching gears, but still in the Facebook universe, activists are saying that Facebook should shut down Messenger Kids. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Messenger Kids, but it is essentially a messenger app that is designed for children from the ages of 6 to 12. And so what Facebook has done is they have done their due diligence in terms of research, of getting information from development experts, health advocacy groups, educators, and parents on how they can essentially create this platform where kids can communicate and learn. But activists are saying that this is very harmful to children and teens, and it messes up their development, giving kids at this young age access to a messaging device where they don't really necessarily understand what's appropriate or what's inappropriate. They don't understand the concepts of privacy. And it's like, as they're developing cognitively, like, they're learning all these things at such a young age, it could literally mess them up socially and psychologically. And so the activists are saying that Facebook should go away with it because it's not helpful to kids' development. But so far, the Messenger Kids app has gotten 45,000 downloads, and they have about 20,000 daily users. So, I mean, if you look at the platform as a whole, you know, Facebook, you know, billions of users, and the Messenger Kids only has 45,000 downloads. I mean, I think it's a small drop in the bucket, but I get it from an advocacy perspective that we want to protect our children. We want to look out for them. We want to speak for them. And if there is something that is, you know, destructive to their development, detrimental to their growth, then yeah, we should have more insight on what they're engaged in. And so I think that a lot of that comes from the home and parenting, what you allow your kids to engage with. But also, I think a lot of it is holding the companies that have such control and agency kind of over our lives because they're integrated in our kind of like cultural makeup, making sure that they're making responsible moves for us and our children. So I get it. And Facebook obviously is saying, hey, no, there's nothing wrong with this. We've done our due diligence and we've looked at it from, you know, a historical perspective, and we've talked to psychologists and we've talked to people that are in this space that this is actually a great device and platform for kids to communicate and learn things. So you kind of have this small war going on between those that think it's destructive and Facebook who thinks it's productive.
Can I add something?
Sure, sure.
I think that's actually very interesting, and I think it's really the way how you use it,
right?
And the amount of exposure and the duration, and I think that just goes with the training and rearing all these kids of the next generation. Like, how much education do you want them to have access
to? That's
right. But also limiting their resource, because we see nowadays. Adults are always having their kids with iPhones and iPads, and how is that not already stunting their social skills and growing and how to, you know, obtain information and just build those social skills of how to actually properly communicate with people.
Right.
I think it's in the same way for this is a platform for their children to get education. But how do you put limitations on it when you're saying it's stunting their growth?
Exactly. I hear it. I mean, I kind of see that in my own home and like being a parent and raising my son. Like, I feel like he came pre-programmed with like a technological understanding. It's like, bruh, like you are too young to be playing with my computer and my phone, but he always figures out a way to get to it. But I'm like, nah, I gotta manage this. I have to monitor this, bro. Like, you can't be on my phone and looking at this right now. I want you to be reading some books and experiencing nature outside and, like, you know, learning how to have a conversation, you know, with us, like, versus being kind of like zombied out because you're so connected to this phone. And so, I mean, I agree with that. And I feel like it does start in the home. It does start with parenting, and it does start with, I mean, even if it's a Facebook Messenger kids app, or if it's just like time that we allow our kids to even hold the phone, no matter what the app is, you know? So I'm totally with you on that.
Right. I think it's within moderation, it can be used properly.
That's right. I feel it. Well, yeah. So switching gears a little bit to Apple, and I think we covered this on the show about a month ago. When we were discussing, like, hey, like, you get the new iPhone or you make the update on your old iPhone, and all of a sudden, like, everything slowed down. Like, you're like, what the heck? My iPhone is not even 2 years old, and why is it, you know, acting so slow? So we covered the story of Apple saying, hey, yeah, actually, we do slow down your phone because it's a processor issue, and because of the battery, you know, the battery isn't powerful enough to, you know, run the newest operating system. So when you put the new operating system onto your phone, it's going to be slower. So Apple, you know, apologized for that, and they offered up, a $29 battery replacement. But they are getting a lot of flack from, I think they're being sued by France. And now there's a new investigation that the United States Department of Justice is doing. And it's saying that Apple has violated the securities laws with its software updates, and because it slowed down users' iPhones, like, they're saying that, hey, there might be a lawsuit coming now from, you know, from the United States. And so I think this is interesting because, like I just mentioned, France has a lawsuit against Apple. I believe Italy does as well, and now the U.S. government is investigating it and saying that, hey, you might have to pay for this. Like, this is not cool. Like, you essentially, you know, cheated people. And it's, again, another example of a company misleading people. And, man, I think this is kind of like a huge hit for Apple. And I think, I mean, we discuss this all the time in terms of, you know, the post-Jobs era of Apple is much different. And just in terms of the rollout, the products, like the bugs, like, you know, it's not the same Apple. And I feel like, man, like, I mean, of course, Apple's always experienced lawsuits and people trying to, you know, sue them and come for them. But, man, I feel like it's one thing after the other. And, like, this is a huge thing that you have multiple countries that, you know, that are saying, like, nah, bro, like, Apple, you got to pay up. So we'll see what happens with this. But I don't know how many of you iPhone loyalists out there, what you think about this or feel about this, if you even care. But I do, because if I'm about to spend a rack, $1,000 for an iPhone, man, I want that bad boy to work more than just a year. So, and I don't want the company that is supposed to be known for, you know, excellence and known for giving me the best product to be having these technological issues. So that's that on that. Case closed. We'll definitely return to the story to see actually what happens. But yeah, Apple, get your stuff together. One thing that they are doing that I think is pretty cool is that they have released the new iOS update 11.3, and it's giving users access to their personal health records. I think this is fantastic. So this is like the polar opposite of what I just said. This is what makes Apple dope. So you're able, with this new update, you're able to track your personal health records. And you enter, you know, your fingerprint, you know, or the face detection, or you put in your password, and you're able to literally see, you know, all the health information. So if it's from four different companies, like if you have whatever your health history is, it pulls all the information of your life and puts it into the app. And so you're able to see, you know, your allergies, whatever conditions, or whatever immunizations that you've gotten, your lab results, medications that you might be on, any procedures that you had, all in one place. And I think that is very useful. And man, like that, it's going to help. I think in a general sense, it's going to help us, you know, want to be more healthy, because you're able to have more information about what your health is. You're able to track it much better. And oftentimes, like, you don't really have that information in front of you. It's not really accessible. Like, and to be able to have it now, like in an app where you can like literally reference it at any time, I think it could potentially make you want to live a healthier lifestyle or make better decisions, because like, hey, if you have a condition, or if your blood work ain't looking too hot, hey, you can see that, and it's updated every time you go to the doctor. And I think that's pretty fresh. And this is what Apple is actually good at doing in terms of making, you know, its customers live a better day through whatever new software application that they develop. And so I think this is one of them that, you know, I actually applaud. And then the last note about this is that you're able to have this fluid conversation between you as the patient and you as your health, you know, care provider. So the caregiver and the patient, they're able to have now more of a fluid conversation, being that, hey, you go to the doctor, you know, all the records are, you know, updated and uploaded, and now you have them, you know, almost instantaneously. And so, hey, instead of having to log in the browser or wait for that letter or call in, like, you got it on your app. So applause to Apple on this one.
I think that's brilliant, especially because, you know, that could be very useful in emergency cases.
Yep.
And, you know, when, say, you do have an accident, you do have to go to the ER, and they're asking you all these questions, but you don't remember everything right away.
That's a good point.
Just look at it, and you can see, oh, you've had this type of medicine in your system, we can't use that, or you have an allergic reaction to this,
right,
we can't use this type of medicine.
Yeah. So
it's actually pretty brilliant.
Yeah, I love it. So, hey, again, a kudos and applause to Apple on that. I think that it was a natural progression, and I think that's a good thing to add to the cadre of things that, you know, Apple is good at. But I will tell you something that is super interesting to me, and a man who is super interesting to me, and his name is Elon Musk. I mean, and we all know what he, you know, has brought to market in terms of Solar City, in terms of Tesla, in terms of, you know, SpaceX. But what he is saying, this is pretty cool too. Like, he's arguing, you know, as the you know, company founder of Tesla and CEO, he's arguing this, like, hey, I want to make Tesla the most valuable company in the world, and I'm going to do it within one decade. And I'm going to make a bet. If I don't do this within one decade, I'm not going to get paid $1. So essentially, it's literally a bet saying that Elon Musk is saying that he has to achieve 12 revenue and profit goals, essentially growing Tesla's market value from $59 billion to $650 billion in 10 years. If he doesn't do it, he doesn't receive anything. So that means that Tesla has to grow in value about 90%, which is I think, very doable. And especially with, you know, what he's been able to do thus far and just his trajectory and just, you know, where the world is going in terms of our environmental consciousness and our, you know, our lessened dependency on fossil fuels and using other energy sources for, you know, multiple things, transportation being one of them. I feel like this is a bet that I would take. And so he, by law, because it's a California company, by law, he has to at least have a minimum wage. So I think the state minimum wage is $10.50. And so all he's been taking is about $37,000 annually. And I think it's going to bump up like another $10,000 from last year. So it's about $40,000 and some change. But he says he doesn't cash it. He just keeps it in a Tesla bank account somewhere. And I think it's a great leadership strategy because he's saying that, hey, if the company is successful, then I'll be successful. And as the company head, as the leader, I'm not going to take a salary. I'm not going to get any of the perks that a lot of CEOs, you know, in other areas of commerce would get. I am betting all of our collective talent, our brain trust, to make this company number one. And so I have to lead by example. And to prove it to my employees, to prove it to my colleagues, like, I'm in it. So if you guys are successful, then I'm successful. And so, again, no salary, no cash bonuses, no equity. He has to, you know, raise the value of Tesla by 80% in 10 years. And if he does, hey, he and all his employees are going to be fucking rich. They're going to be super wealthy. And so I love the fact that he is using this as kind of like a PR story. But I mean, a lot of CEOs in Silicon Valley don't take a salary. I don't think that part is necessarily like news, but the fact that he's saying that he's going to bring Tesla to be one of the number one companies in the world in 10 years, I think that is a huge statement, and to be able to stand by that is super dope. So Tesla has all sorts of stuff, you know, in their next phase of development. I don't know if you guys have heard about the solar roof. So obviously the Tesla will be able to have a roof that generates solar energy, so that not only does it have electric energy, but it also has, you know, sun energy, solar energy. So, and that's going to help obviously with the battery storage, and who knows what that will do in terms of how, you know, the vehicle operates. But yeah, they're trying to also, you know, make the car more autonomous and be able to, you know, make your car make money for yourself. So because of the autonomous driving, when you're not using your car, you can turn your car into a business so that the car is being used to make money while you're at home sleeping or you're at work. So the car just isn't taking up parking space or just taking up space in general. It's actually being used to help facilitate the fluidity of transportation. So all these things Elon, you know, is trying to figure out, he's trying to configure within the next 10 years so that Tesla literally is the dominating company in the transportation space. I'm a fan of Elon, so I applaud him. I think this is dope. What do you think, Marissa?
I think that's amazing. It just shows like how confident he is.
Yeah, right?
Started. And that's actually a very attainable goal for him.
Yeah.
Because to grow anywhere from 80 to 90% in the next 10, even 15 years, that's
right.
Like that's essentially 10% a year. That's actually very attainable.
Right.
At the rate that he's going and all the different types of fields that he's working in the space and solar, it's a very smart plan for him. And
for
it just
sure.
shows that, like, he's not into the money, essentially. He's just into the creative process and revolutionizing technology.
That's right.
How, you know, business is. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I love that. Go ahead. That was
I
dope.
Like him, too.
Yeah, that was dope. All right, well, we're about to wrap it up. I have one last story, and I say that for last because it is my favorite, and it is Black Panther. It is finally here. We are a couple weeks away. And, yeah, we're talking about Ryan Coogler, my boy. The director of Black Panther. He's also done Creed and Fruitvale Station, starring Chadwick Boseman. Black Panther is like the hot topic right now in terms of movies, and so it's getting a lot of buzz from a lot of people. I know they just had the premiere this week, but people are saying that it's one of the best superhero movies they've seen. It made people feel, you know, empowered. It made them feel represented. Just in terms of, like, it's not the same cliche and the same, like, the techniques they use to tell, you know, these type of stories. Like they said, it's full of stunning visuals, iconic performances. It has a lot of substance to it. It has all the cultural nuances. People are just, like, really, really gung-ho. People are even saying it's the new Star Wars. It's better than Star Wars, rather. But, yeah, from performance to cinematography to just... like I said, the cultural nuances, I think that the Ryan Coogler and the whole squad is like really, really knocked this one out the park. And I mean, you got to think too, like it's already breaking records. It's the fastest pre-selling superhero movie of all time. Like it's outsold, you know, Batman versus Superman, the Guardians of the Galaxies. Like it's all the reviews are in the upper 90%. Like, hey, I hope this movie like it is all that people are saying it is. I'm super juiced and excited. Like, we've been talking on this show about it for a long time. I can't wait to see it. I encourage everyone out there to see it. Like, but yeah, this is it. Like, this is what I've been saying. I think it will be the first black directed, black acted movie that will make $1 billion. And I think that is, you know, history. You know, in itself, being that today is February 1st, the first day of Black History Month. Like, I mean, to have this movie in this month and just what it represents to, you know, African people, black people, I think that it is phenomenal for us to witness this and have this as a prototype for our youngsters. We talk about superheroes and you know, strong imagery and things to look up to. Like, this is it. And so I can't wait to support, you know, this film and support Ryan as a filmmaker. And so, I encourage everyone out there to go and check it out. And yeah, quick show today, but I think that's all we got, Marissa. And I think we're going to close it down. But I appreciate you guys tuning in and listening to your boy. We'll be back next week to cover even more dope stories. And I can't wait to rap with y'all again. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. And I appreciate all you guys tuning in. I'll see you next week.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio. Instagram me at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.